So is the mud gone yet?
The mud?
What? Yeah.
What? Do you mean?
Well, it's a bit sunnier, isn't it, the last few days?
Yeah. Well, I'll, when we get onto the bit about what we've been up to, I think the answer to that is a firm no.
Ah!
Judging by the state of my boots. Yeah. God.
We need a bit more time, a few more days of sunshine and dry weather. But there's a lot to dry out, isn't there?
When we've done today, I'm going to cut the grass. First cut of the year, I'm sure. Actually, one of my neighbours, he was cutting it in January, which is
wrong.
Yeah, it is wrong. It is.
There's no. Let's not beat about the bush. That's wrong.
No, there should be a law against that.
So welcome to yet another Hidden Wiltshire podcast. We've been doing this for almost longer than I can remember, Paul.
Well, bearing in mind I can't remember what I had for breakfast, then that's not difficult. But this is episode 33.
33?
Yeah.
Goodness me, we've been doing this for a long time. We're going to run out of things to talk about, aren't we?
Yes, very soon, I think. I was chatting to Stu the other day. I first mentioned of him today, and I said I'm not sure how long we're going to keep this going for because we're running out of things to talk about, and then we find something else. So
yeah, we'll string it out as long as we can, but I think at some point we're probably going to have to say maybe we'll do this once a month instead of every 2 weeks, because we need to go out and find something to talk about.
I was thinking exactly the same thing. Once a month would be cool.
Yeah, so I think we'll give it a while longer, but I think eventually we will have to switch this to because we're exhausting Wiltshire.
Well, yeah. We're not, but I know what you mean. That was my response to Stu, is that there's so much to go at, but it's a question of finding it. And that's where the listeners come in. We really do need some ideas from people, places they'd like us to go and go
well,
and
we
explore.
We could just pull our finger out and do a bit more research.
Well, we could, but you've got a job and I do have other things to do. So.
Well, that's the thing. It does take a lot of time. And I think... We both sort of reached the point where we're maxed out. And
anyway,
I think we better introduce
ourselves.
Well,
yeah, who are you?
So my name is Glyn Coy. I set this podcast up a while ago and in the midst of time. And at the time I asked my podcasting friend, Paul Timlett, don't want to steal your thunder by saying your name, but I will say it, to join me. And he foolishly agreed. And here we are, 33 episodes in.
Mm. Is it 33 episodes or 33 years? Because it feels like the latter. But...
I've lost track. The thing is, though, we started all this during lockdown, and the lockdown years are just a blur now. I say something happened 3 years ago, and actually it was 5 years ago, because I've lost 2 years of my life. I don't know.
As I've told you many times before, there's a podcast I listen to, in fact, probably the only other one. I have to listen to this when you've done the edit, just to, in case you've missed anything, which you never do, so it's completely pointless. But the only other one I listen to is a thing called the Fujicast, which is a photography one. And they started before lockdown, but then during lockdown, because they were both professional photographers, they couldn't work. So they were doing a daily podcast, can you believe?
Right.
And they kept that up for quite a long time. Then it went to once a week, and they've just announced they're going to once a month.
Yeah, gets to you in the end, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
It's actually, I mean, people may not realise, but it's actually quite a lot of work, even doing one every 2 weeks.
Even when we just make it up as we go along.
I know. And there's a lot of work that goes into it. And, you know, we're always trying to, you know, build up the bank of things to talk about. But I'm getting a sense this year that we're kind of winging it week by week, which is why we say at the end, we don't know what we're going to talk about in 2 weeks' time, because we genuinely don't.
It's not because there's nothing to talk about, but I think it's trying to do things in the right order, and it's just getting the timing right. And and of course, I'm going to be back to France again soon, so we need to sort of bank a few walks and things, which I've been doing. So, so that when I'm recording from over there, then there's stuff to talk about.
Yeah. So what have you been up to the last 2 weeks?
Well, as I mentioned with the mud, I've done a few walks. I've done, three walks in the last 2 weeks. Yeah. Since the last podcast, one wasn't in Wiltshire, so doesn't count. But I'm going to tell you where it is anyway, because it was a fabulous walk. Went to a place called Fernhurst, which is in, it's just into Sussex. It's right on the edge of the Surrey Hills, into Sussex. And it's, I can't remember the name of the hill now. I think it's called Blackdown Hill, something like that, which is the highest point in Sussex, which I never knew, having lived there for many, many years. Grew up in Sussex. I always thought the highest point was the South Downs, but it's not. So we went up there, very different sort of landscape. It's quite a lot of clay there, so the mud was pretty dire. And we were sort of, a lot of it was walking through woodland or forests, and a lot of woodland. So really claggy, and then climbing up to this hill, which is about 1,000 feet. And then you get, basically get up to the top, and it looks like the New Forest. It's incredible, complete different. Yeah. So it's green sand, sort of heathland, and a lot of gorse, absolutely stunning. And the views, good God. I mean, it was quite a hazy day, but unbelievable. I mean, on a clear day, you can see right across the Isle of Wight, which is, I don't know, about 40 miles away, apparently. It can't be that far, but it's a long, long way. In theory, you can see the town where I grew up, Crawley. So I'm blooming glad we couldn't see it, because it's an horrible place. But yeah, stunning walk, lovely. I tell you what, though, you do get a sense of, the immense wealth that there is in this country, despite everything, that us normal folk have to put up with in terms of prices and stuff, and the number of people who are homeless and in poverty. And you go and walk around there, and you just think, well, where is it? The houses, every house that you're looking at, certainly up in the Surrey Hills, cost countless millions of pounds. Most of them are empty. Blinds drawn, curtains drawn, gates locked, no sign of life.
Yeah, but that's because they're probably owned by Russians.
Yes. Or more likely, bankers who are in their London flats, and these are weekend homes.
But, getting controversial again.
Oh, I know.
We're going to lose followers now.
It does. Business. You can get very angry about it. But it's you can see why they have houses there. Beautiful. Absolutely stunning.
Yeah, but some people do live in a different world to common man.
Yeah.
And us common folks who walk around the Wiltshire countryside and record podcasts, it's a different world.
Two other walks in Wiltshire. Did the Newton Tony one, which I wrote a blog about.
That's on a website.
Yeah, that was good. So got to thank Elaine Perkins for that, because she put a post up on the Facebook group about that. So again, people who aren't on Facebook, unless they're subscribed to alerts when new things go on the website, they won't know about this. So I posted the blog on the Facebook sites. But the blog itself is actually on the website. That was interesting. I knew that there was an old railway line that went through Newton Tony, but I'd completely forgotten about it. And it was only when I sort of did the research that I realised it was quite a significant line. It was mostly it was a military line that connected all the way up through the train line from Salisbury up to Basingstoke and London. So that's the main line. But then this was a branch that went all the way up to Lark Hill and Balfour Lark Hill. And I think it went beyond Lark Hill. It did carry passengers, but also a lot of military hardware on the train. So it's fascinating trying to follow that. That you can read the blog. We should probably do a podcast about it.
Yeah.
Roman roads there, and then Porton Down. It's just such a bizarre mix of stuff, from ancient history, prehistory, all the way up to this massive great research establishment over at Porton Down. The other thing, which I haven't put anywhere yet, is Stu and I went to Bentley Wood this week. Again, that's another one we owe Elaine for. I think she'd mentioned Bentley Wood a couple of times, and she'd sent me some tips of places to go. She sent suggested routes, so we cobbled a route together, which gave us a real good flavour of Bentley Wood. I hadn't realised how big Bentley Wood was. So we parked up in Farley, which was a challenge. But if you go and walk over there, and I will write something for the website, for the Facebook site. It's probably not enough for a separate blog. But Farley, the lanes through there are very, very narrow. So parking was a bit of a challenge until we found the church. We took a wrong turn, and I, as I said before, if I go on a walk somewhere, I normally try and head straight for the church because you can normally park up somewhere. And sure enough, there was a sort of bus stop and lay-by quite right opposite the old almshouses. That was a good place to park. So we parked up there and then went through another wood first called Hound Wood. And then from there into Bentley Wood, and then on the way back into, I think it's called Blackmore Copse. It's only 7 miles, I think. Absolutely flat, bit muddy in places. Blackmore Copse was quite boggy. But each bit of wood and each copse that you go through, they're all very different in nature, which struck me.
Yeah. Now, Blackmore Copse is actually Wiltshire Wildlife Trust Reserve.
Mm. It was their first one. It was their first reserve.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I've in the back of my head, I was thinking, I've heard of that before, and I suddenly realised it's Wiltshire Wildlife Trust. It's not one that I've been to. But looking at Bentley Wood on Google Maps, there's two car parks in the wood.
There's probably more, actually. The map that Elaine sent me, there seem to be quite a few.
I can see two on Google Maps, Bentley Wood Car Park West and Bentley Wood Car Park East.
Yeah, we walked through the west one, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, we wanted to do a slightly longer walk, which is why we stopped in Farley. Mm. The other option was to go a bit further afield and start in Pitton and then walk all the way down there. So it would make it a longer walk. But because we didn't really know what we were doing, or we thought we'd keep it short, and we wanted to go to the pub at the end of it, and that turned into a complete disaster. So there's a pub in Farley and there's a pub in Pitton. So we walked past the Farley pub, which was open. And there was a couple of guys sitting outside having a glass of wine, but we hadn't finished the walk, so we carried on. We thought, oh, let's get back to the car, and then we'll go to the one in Pitton because we passed that and it looked really nice. And the one in Farley looks nice as well. So we got back to the car, drove off to Pitton, got to the pub. It was shut.
A story of your life.
Absolutely. We should have just stuck with our first, with plan A and gone to the Farley one. The first bit of Bentley Wood that we went into was what struck me was how open it was. So a lot of the understory has been cleared, and it's a very sort of open, airy wood, beech trees everywhere, very few fallen trees. What they were had been cleared, I guess. And then as we carried on through the day, different sorts of trees appeared, and it was ash, and clearly a lot of those are being removed because of ash dieback. And there were more with pine trees, evergreens. So it's quite interesting watching the woodland change. But I think if I did it again, I'd probably go, number one, if you're going to go, I'm told bluebell season is fantastic there. Mm-hmm. In fact, you could already see the bluebell leaves starting to sort of stand up as they are in our garden. They're starting to look a bit quite sprightly now. So bluebell season, perhaps when it's a bit drier as well, if you go to Blackmore Copse, might dry it out a bit, although Elaine said that it never really dries. But what was the other thing I was going to say? Lost my train of thought. I think if I went again, I'd probably do a more varied walk and do more perhaps in the open countryside, perhaps up onto Dean Hill, taking that part. So to mix it up, because I'm not mad keen on woodland walks. I don't know enough about, you know, the botanical side of it and what I'm looking at. I mean, God, the butterflies here are incredible. I think it was a place for purple emperor butterflies. And we thought we'd seen some, but by the time you get your binoculars up to your face, they've gone.
Yeah. I think I really enjoy woodland walking. It's one of my favourite pastimes. But in terms of hidden Wiltshire stuff, it's very hard to...
Yeah, exactly.
To take photographs and make them interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And write about them, because woodlands are very similar.
Yeah. Oh, look, there's a tree.
Yeah, exactly.
There's another tree.
Then they are pleasant things, or pleasant places to walk. They're just difficult to...
Yeah.
Great, interesting.
Yeah, it's not great. It wouldn't make a great blog, I don't think.
No.
I'll tell you what we did see, which I think... I saw as many the other day as I've seen in about the last 5 years or 10 years. Nuthatches. We saw two. Absolutely amazing song, really shrill song, and it carries right through the wood. We heard this bird, and I said, "Stu, what's that?" And I made a complete fool of myself. I said, "Is that a goshawk?" Nothing like a goshawk.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's got that sort of like three whistles to the song. And then Stu spotted it, this nuthatch up in the tree above us. And we were really, you know, God, it's brilliant seeing a nuthatch. And then we saw another one. Unbelievable.
There you go. Well, I did quite a long walk a week or so ago. I went up towards Swindon, actually.
Yeah.
Parked by Ralton Church.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, some of us have to.
Yeah.
Still part of Wiltshire, so we have to not be biased in our coverage of this wonderful county. But anyway, yeah, I went up towards Swindon, but got as far as Rawton, and ducked into a church there that was on a sort of hillside, and I was quite surprised. This church was, it felt like it was quite remote. It was down a very narrow country road, and it had the biggest car park I've ever seen of a church. It was huge. I used that as a base, and I went from there to Binknoll Castle, which is a hill fort, which is not easy to get to. So it is a bit of an effort to get there. And I walked from there across to further along to Broadtown Whitehorse to get some drone footage of it and add it to the site in due course. But it was about an eight mile circuit.
Oh, blimey.
But it was horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Well, actually seeing Binknoll Castle was great. Getting to the White Horse was great, but I dropped down and trudged back through the flat fields because it was just so muddy up top. It was just slipping and sliding everywhere.
So it was muddy up on the castle, on the hill fort?
Yeah, it was muddy all up on the hill and in the woods. I mean, there was a really nice woodland nearby, which was... you could see all the spring flowers were coming up because it's going to be fantastic for bluebells on the bank there. It's a really nice place. So I'd go back and do Binknoll Castle as a circuit, but I wouldn't extend it to get to the White Horse. That was okay in itself, but it was just not a very interesting trudge back through the fields.
And can you see much of the White Horse?
No.
It's quite a small one, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when you're down at the base of it, you just can't see it because the ground is too low.
No, of course not, yeah.
And somebody said to me, when I put the photo on Twitter, somebody said, "Oh, that must have been taken a long time ago because I can't see the White Horse from the road." I said, "Well, it was taken yesterday." And she was really surprised. But I realised that you can only really see it when you're above it right now.
Yeah.
So a drone shot was fine. It's very prominent, but you can't really see much of it down.
That's
further
down. So weird, isn't it, about some of these White Horses, like the Uffington one, which you only really get any sort of sense of it from above.
Yeah.
And so when they carve these things, I, you know, ooh, what's that all about? Who is it for?
I don't know who their audience is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. And how do they actually do it when they can't see what they're doing? Yeah, it's one thing. When they're down on the ground, I mean, of course you can't see it, but so you've got to stand back. But even if you stand, you know, go a couple of miles away, you still can't see it. You have to be up in the air.
Yeah,
very weird.
So, just a bit of a random question, but did you manage to survive yesterday without banging your head?
I did. And I had to duck down.
Yeah, exactly. That shows you how low it was.
Yeah.
So just to put people's mind at rest, we weren't headbanging and doing stupid things.
Despite your Motorhead T-shirt you're wearing.
Exactly. There. But we went into a long barrow at All Cannings. Not your common or garden ordinary lawn at Long Barrow, I have to say. It's a relatively recent one. It was built in 2014.
A novelith? It's a novelithic Long Barrow.
Novelithic,
yeah.
We even created a new age category for it.
So we went to see and interview Tim Dore, who's the the farmer, the landowner around there who built the barrow, and he came up with the name Novelith, or Novelithic rather, because of course you've got Neolithic and all the rest of it, Mesolithic, so he had to think of a new name, and I think Novelithic is perfect.
Yeah, but we'll be covering that in a future podcast because we recorded an interview with him, but it's a fantastic thing. I mean, it is a modern burial chamber built as a ancient long barrow. So interesting juxtaposition of modern and old.
And I'd never heard that that name before, columbarium.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Place, a burial place, columbarium.
Yeah. Yeah, but we won't spoil the surprise on that. But yeah, it'll be really interesting when we actually get that podcast out in a few weeks' time.
And don't if you can't wait and want to go and see it, you can't go in. It's locked for obvious reasons because there are
people's remains in there.
Remains in there. It's people's ashes in there. I think you can go in if you can pay for a guided tour. I think looking at the website, it was I think something like £30.
Yeah,
which most of that goes to the the upkeep of the mound. So
you can walk up to it and and have a good look around.
Yeah, and as Tim said, you can kind of have a picnic on top.
It's in a lovely location. Yeah, it really is.
It's superb. Yeah.
So something else happened. I got sent a book. Would you believe? One of my
wasn't ours. I didn't send it to you.
No, it wasn't ours, and the postman didn't return yet another one. But somebody sent me a book. It was a Twitter follower, and he contacted me and said, "Oh, I found these old copies of my grandfather's book that he wrote. Can I send you a copy? Just because I don't really want them sitting on a bookshelf. They need to be read." And this was a gentleman called Jonathan Steadman who lives in Cornwall, but his grandfather was, I don't know what his first name was, but the book's written by A.R. Steadman. And for many years, he was the head teacher at Marlborough Grammar School. And he wrote this book and it was published in 1960 called Marlborough and the Upper Kennet Country. And it's really quite a detailed history of that area from prehistoric times right through to, I guess it's the 1960s. So I'm going to have a dip into that. It's fantastic. But I was really pleased and happy to receive this from Jonathan.
And when did he write it?
Handwrote me a letter and explained the context of it.
Oh, another handwritten letter. Mm. So when was it written?
It was published 1960, so it would have been then. And apparently his grandfather was head teacher there from 1930 to 1965 in Marlborough Grammar School, and then he was taken ill and retired to Oldbourne. So he's very much a Wiltshire man.
Yeah.
And Jonathan has very fond memories of, you know, visits to Wiltshire as a child and being in the Downs. So he follows the stuff that we write and publish and is very appreciative of it.
Yeah, well, we've said before, it sort of kind of makes it all worthwhile, doesn't it?
It does.
Sort of hear about stuff like that.
Yeah, and also, Hidden Wiltshire was featured in yet another newsletter publication. We're really becoming famous, aren't we? Been in the Tilt's Head newsletter.
Yes, that's right.
Weren't you in the Chittern one at one point as well? Or is that
no, big... not in the Chittern one.
Oh, you haven't reached those dizzy heights.
Oh no, I was thinking I had some photographs in the what's it called, CPRE,
right?
Council Protection. Yeah, they use some of my photographs.
Yeah. I've also been a couple of my photos have been in the Fovent Badges newsletter, which is interesting because we're going to talk about that in a minute.
Yeah. The one that we're in.
Yeah.
You're going to tell us what it is?
It's the Wiltshire Building Records newsletter. Isn't it wonderful? I mean, it's a wonderfully niche interest, Wiltshire Building Records.
It is.
And it's a really long newsletter as well. There's loads of pages in it.
It's not going to make us famous, though, is it?
Of course it is. Go on. Every little bit helps. No, but Wiltshire Building Record, the contact came because one of their historians, Dorothy Treasure, I think her name is, she was doing a talk at the Bratton History Association a month after I did mine.
Yeah.
And they'd noticed I'd done a talk about blind houses and it's Wiltshire Buildings. So they asked if I'd write an article about blind houses for their newsletter. So yeah. I duly did. And
actually, it's naughty of me to laugh because it's good of them to use it. And I did have a look through it, and it's an amazing publication, isn't it? I
mean, yeah, they do a huge amount of... Well, they publish a huge amount of stuff and they do a lot of research on Wiltshire's older buildings.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
It's, I just never heard of it, but... Is it something to do with the history society over there?
They seem to be based, I don't know much about them, but they seem to be based at the Wiltshire and Swindon History Centre in Chippenham.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether they just use it as a space or whether they're affiliated with them, because that's part of Wiltshire Council. I don't know for sure. But they do a lot of building research, so you can actually get them to come in and do some dating work on your building and research on its history and the rest of it.
An amazing publication. One that just completely passed me by.
Yeah. I didn't know anything about it until... Mm. Well, actually, I did, because I was following them on Twitter, and I do like some of their stuff, because they post these wonderfully niche, you know, things about...
Yeah.
The latest thing was they posted stuff about these particular stones that you find dotted around Warminster, which are to do with the old sort of coaching times. But anyway, it's fascinating. Very niche interest, but important one.
Oh, just a tangent. I'm sitting here looking at your blooming sweatshirt with Motorhead written all over it.
Yeah.
I went to the opticians last week, which isn't that exciting. But I was chatting to the optician who lives in either Bowerchalk or Broadchalk, and he follows the... I don't think he listens to this, but I think he follows the website. And after I'd been in to see him, and I was chatting to the dispensing person to order some more contact lenses, and he's sitting in his little consulting room, and I thought he was preparing for the next patient. And he said, I'm just looking at your blog about... actually, I think he was looking at Elaine's blog about... wasn't Knapped Down, but Over That Way, and the Coombe Bissett bit, and he was reading that. I thought, well, you're busy then, aren't you? But he said, did you know that what's his name from Status Quo, Rick Parfitt, that he had a house in the hills above there, above Coombe Bissett, and I think he bought I think he said it was a barn, an old barn, which he basically bought it for the land and pulled it down or converted it to this incredible house up on the hillside. And he said it's just the most amazing position with great views. And I mean, of course, Rick Parfitt's dead now, but I had no idea he lived in Wiltshire.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, look at that. That's hidden.
Yeah, and in Wiltshire.
Yes.
So it fits the bill.
So that counts.
Anyway, we better get on with our main topics. We've been warbling on for half an hour now.
Yeah. God, Mr. Jenkins, get your letter in.
So this week's topic is going to be focused, again, not so much on a walk, but on a place and some things that we find across Wiltshire. And we've called this Wiltshire's Chalk Badges. Now, the reason why, well, we're going to start to focus on a concentration of chalk badges, which many of you will have seen if you drive down the A30. Because just as you approach the village of Fobbend, just on the roadside there, you can look across and see the hill rise up. And there you'll see quite a lot, a concentration of chalk military badges etched into the side of the hill. I think there's 9 at the moment, although there have been a lot more.
8, I think.
8.
Yeah. I think 8.
I can't count then, can I?
Well, I was trying to find out when I was doing a bit of research, and I thought, I wonder how many there are, because apparently when they were carved, at one point there were 20 that could be seen.
Yeah, there's been many.
Yeah. One of the things I read said that only 8 remain. And then there was a picture, there was a drone shot, and I counted 8.
Yeah, and the thing is that some of them do date back to the First World War period, although others have been etched in more modern times. But yeah, there's been some that have faded into obscurity and some that have been re-etched, but there is a society, that the Fobbend Badger Society, that raises money to maintain them. Because the thing about chalk, when you carve it into the hillside, is if you don't maintain it, it will disappear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we were talking to Tim Dore yesterday, he was saying he had a load of chalk left over from his long barrow, and within 3 or 4 years it had totally grassed over and disappeared. You have to keep on top of it. So I think they have a sort of rotational thing going on, where every 3 or 4 years a badge is recut or rechalked.
I think they scrub it or whatever, but I think they describe it as cleaning the chalk. So a bit of weeding, really.
But they do rechalk them, because I know up on the top, I've been up there, and I've seen big piles of chalk that they've obviously transported in when they do the work. And it's funny, when you look on some of the badges close up, they've got sort of little barriers that they've put in, because the chalk rolls down the hill, of course, and they put that in to stop the chalk all rolling down and stopping. Yeah. And obviously they've been doing it for years, so they know what they're doing.
And that probably explains why. I mean, it costs them something like £30,000 a year to maintain those badges, and you can see why. If they've got a whole chalk up there, and I don't know whether, well, I assume they have to pay to get that shipped in.
Yeah. I think they have a lot of volunteers. And some of the badges are Commonwealth, so Australian.
Yeah.
So they provide some funds and stuff like that, and they do ceremonies up there and stuff. It's quite interesting.
Apparently the first badge they think was for the because these are basically regimental badges, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
For military. And as you say, the first ones were carved in during World War One, when there was a lot of troops were stationed there. There was a transit camps where they come in and they train, and then they transit before going to Europe. But they think that the London Rifle Brigade was the first badge to be carved. And then, as we said, there was, you know, more and more were carved during the First World War, so that by the end of the war there was something like 20 that could be seen.
Yeah, and I think to put that into context, what you had in World War One is those fields at the bottom would have been full of army camps.
Yeah.
As different troops were gathering before they were shipped off to France to fight. So whilst they were there, and, you know, they could see the great big hill up there, I guess it just became a thing. They went up there and they carve out their regimental badge.
Yeah.
To mark, you know, their point in time.
But they... So during World War II, they were allowed to become overgrown And whether they actually covered some up, I don't know, because it was the same with the White Horses as well, because they didn't want German bombers using them as navigational rocks. So they allowed them to become overgrown. But then after the World War II, the Home Guard, when they were disbanded or stood down, it was people who were in the Home Guard. They, between, I think, 1948 and 51, they cleaned them up. They cleaned the badges, not all of them, as we know, but they restored a lot of the badges. And then I think during that period, two Wiltshire regimental badges were cut. And then I think I read that in 1970, another badge for the Royal Signals was added. So this has evolved over a period of whatever that is, 60 years, roughly, give or take.
Yeah. So I'm just looking at the list of the badges on Wikipedia, and it does actually say there are nine.
There's nine, is there?
Yeah, because there was a YMCA one that faded away, and that's restored.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, so I think on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, on the main aerial picture on Wikipedia, you can actually see eight.
Yeah.
But there is a very, very faded YMCA one that's since been restored.
Right.
So you've got the Royal Wiltshire I can't get my words out to put my teeth back in. Royal Wiltshire Yeomanry, the YMCA, the 6th City of London Battalion, London Regiment, City of London Rifles, which claim to be the first of the badges. Got the Australian Commonwealth Military Force, and they've actually got another badge over at Codford, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah.
The Royal Corps of Signals, that was cut in 1970. Wiltshire Regiment added in 1950, the 5th City of London Battalion, London Regiment, London Rifle Brigade, 8th City of London Battalion, London Regiment, Post Office Rifles, and the Devonshire Regiment. And there's a list of lost badges on there as well. So they've got Royal Army Service Corps, Royal Army Medical Corps, Machine Gun Corps, Queen Victoria's Rifles, etc., etc. Mm. Interesting tradition.
And there were two more. Just a little bit further along the up the valley at Sutton Mandeville, which I was looking at the map to see. I mean, Sutton Mandeville is very close to Fovant, but they are separate. They're distinct from the Fovant badges. So again, carved in the First World War, and one was from the 7th Battalion of the London Regiment. And because of their cap badge, they were nicknamed the Shiny Seventh. So their badge is up there, and the Royal Warwickshire Regiment. And I think they became faded and overgrown over time, and they were restored. I think it was a project to raise funds and restore them in as late as 2019. Presumably for the centenary of the First World War.
Yeah, there is another one. If you go along the A30 towards Salisbury, there is another one a bit further along, which is in the shape of Australia, the Australian badge.
Yeah, I saw that. Oh, that's not part of the Fovant one then?
I think it's maintained by the Fovant crew.
Right.
But that was done relatively recently. It was neglected and disappeared, and they recut it in about 2 or 3 years ago. Yeah. But they have a different voluntary group, the Map of Australia Trust.
Yeah.
So this is the thing. I mean, Australians during World War One were all over Wiltshire, and we know already. We talked about this on this podcast, but we know that there are strong links with Australia and New Zealand in Sutton Veney, with the churchyard there is full of Anzac graves, and Codford as well.
Yeah.
Codford has got a large contingent of New Zealand graves in the church there.
That's right. And as you mentioned just now, there is one badge just outside Codford, just off the A36. So you can see it really clearly from the A36. And it's called the Lamb Down badge because it's on Lamb Down, and Lamb Down is just on the slopes below where Codford Circle, the hill fort.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
The well, they think it's a Neolithic enclosure up on the hills there, which, as we've mentioned before, is strictly private land, and you're not supposed to go there.
It's the Stratton's farm.
Yes. So just below there, this badge has been cut into the hillside, and it's 1917, and I think it's called the Rising Sun. It looks like a rising sun, but it's a cap badge, and it's the badge from the 13th Training Battalion of the Australian Imperial Forces. And apparently the commanding officer got the soldiers to carve this badge in the hillside as a form of punishment.
Oh.
And the hill became known as Misery Hill. Because I guess it's quite steep, and if you're lugging, you know, tools and stuff up there, which back in, you know, 100 and whatever years ago now, would have been pretty heavy. None of your lightweight aluminium stuff that we have today. So yeah, they would send them up there to cut this badge.
Yeah, fascinating. I mean, that was one of the first things I remember when I first started visiting Wiltshire, and I was looking for a place to live. I drive down the A36 and spot this badge on the hill and wonder about the story.
Yeah.
But the Codford badge is one thing, but the ones at Fovant, when I found out about them, I thought I must go and have a closer look, and it was in the back of my mind for a long time. Then I went and I parked up. There's two laybys on the A30, and you can stop, and there's a viewpoint, and it tells you, there's a sign saying what each badge is. But from there, you can actually walk up to the hill, and there's a diagonal path that takes you over the in between the badges, so you get a really close look. And at the top, there's literally behind them, there's an Iron Age hill fort.
Yeah. Chisenbury,
yeah. Which is quite a... It's kind of... When you're there on ground level, it's not too pronounced. But from the air, it looks,
yeah,
you know, very visible.
Yeah, it's a big enclosure, that one.
Yeah.
And it's right next to the... oh, what's the long distance route? I can never remember which one's which. The one that goes from Salisbury Racecourse. You can access it there. And
yeah, it's an old drove, isn't
it? It's an old droveway, yeah. And well, actually, it was the old Turnpike Road as well.
Yes, it was. It was. And that's an interesting story, because I remember we had a discussion with our roadman, Steve Dewey, about it on the Facebook page a while ago, because a few people were noticing something funny about that road. So... it's the road on the top of the hill. I'm just trying to look on the Ordnance Survey to see what it was called. There is a name for it. Is it the old Shaftesbury Drove?
I did write a blog about it, so I've walked that one. And then when we went down into Knapp Down, because Knapp Down's the other side of the hill, dropping into the Ebble Valley, I think.
That's right. So this is like joining up previous podcasts and blogs, etc., isn't it?
Yeah, because
you'd done a couple of walks along different stretches of that drove.
That's right.
Because when you go beyond Chiselbury Camp, you go up over the badges, beyond Chiselbury Camp, you hit the drove road, or the old Turnpike Road.
Yeah.
And then literally beyond that is Knapp Down.
Yeah.
It descends down into the valley.
Yeah.
So I remember we had some discussion about that Turnpike Road. Because, a couple of things people noticed. There were tree milestones along there, which were marked on the old Ordnance Survey map. And then we suddenly realised that trees were often planted by old stone milestones.
Yeah.
And were marked on the map.
And right by Chiselbury Camp, there was a toll house up there years gone by. So the track, I've just been following it on the OS map app, and up by Salisbury Racecourse, it's the old Shaftesbury Drove, which is what you said, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah. And at some point, the concession for that turnpike expired, and the new one was granted to the road down in the valley, which is now the A30.
A30, that's right, yeah.
So some money must have exchanged hands at some point.
Yes, yeah. And talk about access, getting up to the badges. I mean, when Stu and I did the Knapp Down walk, and we went to have a look at Chiselbury whilst we were up there, and then crossed it over to the Fovent badges. And of course, when you're up by the badges and you look down on them, it just looks like a bit of chalk. You've no idea what it is when you're that close up. But it's the same with Codford, with the Lamb Down badge. Because for years I thought, I wonder how you get up there. But I didn't see, there's no footpath or anything. And of course, you know, there would be no reason to go up there anyway, because you can't, you know, the best view is from afar. Actually, the best view is from the A30, so you need somebody else to be driving to have a good look.
Yeah.
But I've Googled it, and there was a guy who'd had a bit of a trespass up there, and he'd followed a path on the Stratton's Farm, I think, and he'd gone across to it. And, you know, he basically said just that. He said, I'm not sure if this is a public right of way. I don't think it was. But to be honest, there's no reason to go up there, because you can't see anything when you're on top of it. But very, very definitely on private land as well.
And the thing is, if you're going to trespass anywhere in Wiltshire, it's probably not the best place to trespass, because that particular farmer has a fairly strong dislike to people going onto his land.
Yeah.
Let's just say that some farmers are a bit more forgiving of folks that respect the land when they go across it, but that particular farmer just doesn't want people on his land.
Yeah, exactly. I've written down another carving. It's not a badge as such, but the Balfour one.
Oh, the Kiwi.
The Kiwi, yeah. Which again dates back to the First World War. It was actually carved in 1919, so just after the First World War.
Yeah.
And when I was reading about it, I didn't realise how big it was. It's from the bottom of its foot right to the top of its back, because it's kind of like it's got its head craned forward, so its back is the highest point in the carving. It's 420 feet. It's huge.
Wow.
But I mean, I've seen it many a time, because it's not too far from here, but I had no idea it was that big. But apparently when the troops, and these were obviously New Zealand troops, hence the Kiwi, they were demobbed after the war, and obviously they wanted to go home. But they were still here, not quite sure why. Maybe they were waiting to be shipped out. But they started to get pretty angry. Why are we still in England? We want to go home. And they rioted. So the commanding officer, to stop them rioting, he set them this project to carve that Kiwi, which is probably why it's so big. So he probably thought, well, I know this will keep them busy for 6 months or whatever.
6 months.
Get them to carve the biggest carving you've ever seen.
Yeah. Well, I remember the curious thing is that I remember last year when we were doing our walk program, I think it was the walk that we did up to the 1917 field. So that would have been the Earl Stoke Wood one.
Mm.
But I remember when we were up on the plain there, there's a gentleman on the walk. He looks across and he suddenly said, oh, look over there in the distance. Isn't that the Balfour Kiwi? And I was like, oh, for God's sake, of course it's not. And I looked across and I thought, bloody well it is.
Yeah.
You could see it from miles away.
Yeah.
It's a huge thing.
It's, I don't know. Again, I sort of read about it in local stuff around here that, because it's so big, I guess that costs a lot of money to maintain as well.
Yeah.
And they, periodically, they try and, you know, whip up a number of volunteers to go and clean it. But I mean, Balfour Camp is now so big, and all the housing that's been built over there. Presumably they're not short of volunteers.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny, I was driving through that way yesterday, because after we'd finished at All Cannings, I had to go to Salisbury.
Mm.
And I drove through, you know, down the valley there, through past Netheravon, down towards Balfour and Amesbury. I was quite surprised how much building has been going on there, new houses. Because, I mean, it's a fact that there's so much archaeology around there. I would have thought getting anything approved would be difficult, but...
Well, as we said before, the MOD got their own team of archaeologists, a lot of volunteers. They've got that project to help rehabilitate, old soldiers, some of whom are suffering from awful injuries and PTSD. Yeah. Is it Nightingale? The operation or the project where they get them into to do archaeological work. And there's the MOD archaeologist who's pretty famous now. He's always on TV.
Richard Osgood, yeah.
Richard Osgood, yeah. He's brilliant, absolutely superb.
Yeah, he's a great communicator.
Yeah. So, they're all over it, the MOD. Any archaeology out there?
Yeah, it is Operation Nightingale. They were on Digging for Britain.
That's
this
right.
Year.
Yeah.
So I know Alice Roberts went over there to have a look at what they were doing on Salisbury Plain. I think they've done quite a bit of work with Wessex archaeology.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that's all the badges, unless anybody knows any different.
Yeah, if anyone knows any more, let us know. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think with the chalk in this neck of the woods, it does lend itself to sort of carving things on hillsides. So we've always had the white horses, which are older. Mm-hmm. There's some debate as to how old some of the white horses are, and I know some of them are more Victorian and, perhaps a little bit earlier than that. But others like Uffington are slightly older. But there's this draw for humans to kind of make their mark on the landscape by carving things into the chalk, because the white really shines out. So this is really a continuation of that, and that is a link between Wiltshire's military links, which is still very strong. But just looking at one thing that just quickly caught my eye as I was looking at the map around Bulford is 9 Mile River, which goes down through Bulford. That reminded me that Steve Dewey had written a blog about that as well.
Yeah, it has, yeah.
Which I always thought funny, because it's called 9 Mile River and it's not anything like 9 Mile.
No, it's not 9 Mile. But he did have a theory as to why it was called 9 Mile. And I can't remember what it was, but it's nine miles. Either.
We should get him on again, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we should, yeah. He's got off for too long.
Yeah, actually, we need to go down our guest list and start to press gang some more people to come in and help us keep this thing going.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. So,
good.
So whilst we've been talking, and what you won't be able to hear because you've got headphones on, is your cat. So it's been pretty vocal right throughout.
Oh, well, it'll be edited out.
Good luck with that. He or she hasn't stopped.
Oh, it's annoying. It's because it's getting close to lunchtime.
Oh, right.
It's quite funny because I have this, what we use to record this is a sort of podcasting platform. And when I get to do the editing and I draw the audio down, I can click a button and ask it to just do some magic stuff, which is just to blot out any sort of background noise and stuff like that.
So is there a kill cat button then?
I'll need to check that. but it doesn't quite work with your traffic.
No, nothing works with that. So can you hear that today?
Not heard it today. No.
Well, as you can see, I've closed the shutters and drawn the curtains, so I think it helps a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
So we'll be back in 2 weeks to talk about something else.
Yeah.
Haven't decided what yet.
No. So thanks to Steve, as ever, Steve Dixon, for the music. So the bit in the middle was called From the Edge of Grey to Green, which we have used once before. And I kind of thought about that one because chalk is not completely white. There's probably a bit of grey in it. And if you don't clean it, it goes green because the grass grows all over it.
Yeah, exactly.
So good. There you are.
Good choice.
There's method in my madness. Next episode, we don't know yet. And the website, as ever, do go on there because there are show. Oh, blimey, what's that? It's a funny noise. Is your cat moving furniture around?
No, that was my son in the kitchen on the other side of the house. So I don't quite know what he was doing there. That's come through two walls.
Well, he's a big boy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, do look at the show notes because there's links and stuff, and we will have a couple of links for what we've been talking about today. And on the website, you can also subscribe to the newsletter and the online shop. We've had a few book orders, haven't we, the last few days?
Yes. Just
picked up again.
Yes. We have had quite a few book orders, actually, and, yeah, we've still got quite a few to sell. So do get yourself a copy if you would like one. Yeah, and there's other things in the shop as well. I need to sort the shop out, actually.
Yeah, we need to.
I need to reinvigorate it and get some more tat on there.
You know?
Stickers, mugs.
It's quality stuff.